Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 418. I'm Dave Elliott, and I'm covered in leather straps. Today, Fantastic Four, 418, aka Volume 2, Number 2, from December 1996. Repercussions, plot and pencils by Jim Lee, script by Brandon Choi. So back in the Heroes Reborn universe, or should this be called the Onslaught universe, or the Wildstorm universe? Okay, Wildstorm universe, maybe not. But it would be cool to see the Thing meet Apollo in the Midnighter. The Fantastic Four of this universe are meeting Mole Man for the first time, and he's running off his mouth about how he wants to destroy the surface world, level the cities, kill all of mankind. You know, the usual antisocial stuff you would expect from ugly people. And Reed, Sue, Ben, and Johnny are concerned about the quantum drive of their crashed ship. It's about to blow up and take them and the entire island with them. Johnny says he's tired of being pushed around. He flames on, he flies toward the Mole Man, and the bright light blinds all the subterranean creatures in the room. Mole Man, thanks to his sunglasses, is the exception. He aims his staff at Johnny, fires a blast of energy at him, hits Johnny, who falls to the ground. Yes, Johnny attacks first, and he gets his ass kicked. Some things never change, no matter what universe you're in. Next, Mole Man has control over all kinds of underground creatures in the cave, including the lichen on the cave floor. He orders the lichen to surround Johnny, extinguish his flames, and basically start to strangle the life out of Johnny Storm. Johnny's teammates have to deal with two hellish monsters, one of which was trying to eat Sue last issue. One monster is male, the other is a female. Reed stretches his arms and legs around the legs of the two monsters. They trip and they fall, Imperial Walker style, and Ben steps in, he grabs them both, rams their heads together, knocking them out. Next, the three of them get surrounded by Mole Man's moloids. Mole Man says, "Resistance is futile. It is only a matter of time before my minions overwhelm you." Reed tells Ben to pick up a big diamond off the floor. If Reed gives that diamond to Sue, he's definitely going to get laid tonight. Next, Reed tells Sue to climb up the wall. Climb up the wall? Not bad for a corporate CEO. She can kickbox. She can climb cave walls. What can't she do? Reed tells Sue to use her powers to create an invisible shaft up through the rock to the surface. And then Reed pulls out his glasses and holds it under the beam of light that comes down from the surface, and he aims it at the diamond, and the diamond starts to glow. Mole Man seems distracted, and Johnny moves in. He yanks the glasses off Mole Man's face, and with all the bright light, Mole Man can't see shit. So with Mole Man and his minions blinded, the FF run like hell to the exit of the cave. And Ben, for some reason, he's now carrying the ship's quantum drive. I thought that was on the surface. How the hell did the quantum drive end up underground with the team and the Mole Man? Mole Man decided, saw that thing and said, "I got to have that." So they get out of the cave. Ben punches around the cave entrance and collapses the hole and seals it up. Reed deactivates the quantum drive so it doesn't explode, and the group takes a moment to get some rest and wonder what the heck is going on with them. But then there's a bright light, and Reed yells out, "Look out!" Next, the story switches over to Atlantis. And boy, Jim Lee draws some really great-looking underwater scenes of the Atlanteans. And what I assume is the capital of Atlantis, there's a guy named Krang. He stops by to see the prince, but Lady Dorma tells him the prince is busy. He's still in mourning over the death of his beloved. I thought Lady Dorma was his beloved. And Krang says it's time for them to strike back against the land dwellers before it's too late. He says, with or without Lady Dorma's permission, he's gonna go see the prince. But then someone else speaks up and calls out to Lord Krang. Krang turns to see his cousin, Orthus, carrying his wife, Reva, who is overcome by the black waters. I guess oil or something dumped in the ocean is causing the black water. And she's dying. Lord Krang grabs Reva and swims off to see the prince. Prince Namor, to show him the treachery of the land dwellers. Hey, don't blame all the land dwellers. Blame, Exxon or BP, or maybe blame Roxxon, whatever oil company is to blame. So Namor is just hanging out, relaxing on his throne, a very elaborate kick-ass throne, by the way. So he's just sitting there, doing nothing. You know, when I sit on my throne, I usually read a comic. Surprisingly, Jim Lee hasn't redesigned the Submariner. He's got the same classic green swim trunks, gold bracelets, and no more ponytail. The only difference is that Namor has an earring in his ear. And sorry, Ben Grimm, it's in his left ear. Namor asks, "How may I serve you, Krang?" And then on the next page, the earring in Namor's ear has disappeared, mysteriously. Ooh, what happened? Krang gives Neva to Namor and says that she's been struck down by the black poison of the land dwellers, and they shouldn't take this crap anymore. They should fight back. And Namor agrees, "Bring me my battle armor. I have tolerated mankind's folly for far too long. The time has come for land dwellers to feel the wrath of Atlantis. They will soon come to fear the power of Namor." Man, the surface dwellers in the Heroes Reborn universe are getting a bad rap. First, Mole Man wants to bring them to their knees, and now Namor. And speaking of being on their knees, the FF have woken up after being knocked unconscious by whatever, and they find themselves being held prisoner in a small room. And someone took all their clothes off and dressed them in these all-white outfits. Johnny asks, "Why don't we just have Ben bust us out of here?" And Reed says it looks like the walls are made from a vibranium polyalloy from Stark Industries, which will absorb the kinetic energy from his blow. But instead of having Reed say that, why not just have Ben try it? Outside the cell, we see they're being watched by a couple of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and the Countess Valentina Allegra di Fontaine. And the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. find watching the prisoners boring. And that is not the first time I have used the phrases agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and boring in the same sentence, but the first time on this podcast. The Countess says that these four people are the only survivors of the Stellar Anomaly. Lots of interest in that damn Stellar Anomaly still. And she says the director wants to know exactly what happened. Suddenly, Johnny catches fire and burns a hole in the wall. Reed covers up the screen so the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can't see in. The FF get out into the hall and find a group of armed agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Johnny puts up a wall of fire between himself and the guards, and Ben punches a hole in another wall, which is not made out of that vibranium polyalloy, and they look out of the hole in the wall, and they see they're way up, high in the air, in the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier. And nevertheless, even though they don't really know much about how to use their powers, they jump out through the hole, and they start falling. Johnny can't keep his flames on high up in the air, and he flames off. Reed has to stretch out and grab him, and then he grabs Ben. S.H.I.E.L.D. sends a bunch of guys in green armor that fly, chasing after the FF. And just when you think there's going to be an exciting mid-air battle between the FF and S.H.I.E.L.D., nope. Turn the page, and the FF are back in custody again, this time with their arms and legs shackled together. Next, we see Nick Fury and Dum Dum Dugan. And by the way, how does anyone climb up through the ranks of a government organization with a nickname like Dum Dum? I guess George W. Bush or Joe Biden could answer that. They're looking at a scanner and tracing some kind of powerful being to Manhattan. They want to get there and stop them, but it's going to take the helicarrier 2 hours to get to New York. They bring in Reed and the others, and Fury asks Reed why he was trying to blow up that Stellar Anomaly. And Reed says he was trying to save the Stellar Anomaly. And really, I'm not sure why anyone cares so much about the Stellar Anomaly. So anyway, an agent informs Fury that the being they're tracking is now attacking New York City. They pull it up on the monitor, and they see it's the Submariner, now wearing that black outfit he wore in the 1970s that covers more of his body, and has a yellow underarm wing things. He yells out, "Humans, heed my words. For too long have the citizens of Atlantis suffered at your hands from your industrial pollutants and toxic waste, but the time of reckoning has come at least." He says, at least, not at last. "And your retribution is at hand. Now shall you feel our wrath." And he's got a whole Atlantean army behind him. Someone says that the world hasn't seen Namor since World War II. And now he's back and he's attacking the UN building. Sue says she always thought that Namor was just a legend. I guess they didn't have cameras back in the 1940s in this universe. Nick Fury says it looks like an all-out war, and he doesn't think S.H.I.E.L.D. has enough firepower to stand against the Atlanteans. And then he says, "Praying might help." Well, only if you're going to pray to the Norse gods, because they could help. Reed says to Nick Fury, "I can only assume you're showing us all this for a reason, Colonel. I'm sure by now you're well aware of the fact that something happened to the four of us during our encounter with that stellar anomaly. What I don't understand is what else you expected us to do when you sent your agent, Wyatt Wingfoot, to confiscate the Excelsior and destroy the stellar anomaly. Fury mentions that Wingfoot has gone rogue, and he didn't authorize the confiscation of the Excelsior. Johnny and Sue suggest they might be able to help out here with the stuff going on in New York City. A few minutes later, up on the helicarrier deck, the FF have been outfitted in SHIELD uniforms made out of unstable molecules, which was licensed to SHIELD by Reed himself, even though he didn't know that. Sue says that they don't work for SHIELD, so they shouldn't have SHIELD logos on their uniforms. So she uses some tape to cover up the logo and then turn it into four logos. Reed says that fate has brought them together and given them fantastic powers, and they can use their powers to help the world, and he calls his team for the first time the Fantastic Four. Johnny thinks it sounds cool, like a great marketing gimmick. A little later, in New York City, Namor is leading the attack on the city when the FF show up, dropped out of some SHIELD planes. Johnny blasts Namor with fire, and then Ben lands on top of him and knocks him into the water, into the river. Okay, hitting him with fire, good idea. Knocking Namor into the water, bad idea. Namor flies up out of the water, carrying the thing, and a large horn. He says he's been content to use only his Atlantean shock troops, but now he's going to call out his own doomsday weapon. He blows his horn, and out of the water, very quickly, like he was just sitting there waiting for Namor to call him, is that big whale-like creature with arms and legs, Giganto. Oh no. How are they going to defeat Giganto? Might I suggest strapping a bomb to Ben's back and sending him down Giganto's throat? There's an idea. So, the issue ends with Giganto menacing over the Fantastic Four, to be continued next issue with guest stars, the Avengers. So that's it. That's it for now. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over. Oh, beauty, talent, fame, money, refinement, obscurity.